You're listening to the Worship Unlimited Ministries podcast.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to part two of this week's podcast, which is my interview with British author Natasha Woodcraft. As I told you at the beginning of part one, she is the author of The Wanderer series, a set of books in which she reimagines or retells the story of the first murder, which we read about in our Bibles in Genesis 4, the well-known story of Cain and Abel. And so in The Wanderer Scorned, which came out earlier this year, Natasha told the story from Cain's point of view and took us right up to the murder of his brother. And then in the second book, which releases today on the 3rd of December, 2022, Natasha picks up the story after the murder from the point of view of a fictitious character that she has invented for the purposes of the story, Juan, who is Abel's sister, his twin sister. So when we talked in the first part of this podcast, Natasha talked about her songwriting, how she writes songs, and how she actually includes some of those songs in her books. And I loved reading the songs in The Wanderer Scorned. But actually, if you go onto YouTube, onto Natasha's YouTube channel, you can hear those songs because she's actually recorded them. And she's now in the process of recording the songs from The Wanderer Reborn. But she actually blessed us by singing one to me live over Skype when we did our interview. So I'm going to let Natasha introduce the song and sing it for us. I'm amazed that she could just do that, just sing a cappella like that, because I don't think I could and I don't think I'd have the courage. But as you'll hear, she does a beautiful job. And then I'll continue with the interview that we did together.
So I've chosen one towards the end, and it's the song's called In Wonder of Leviathan, and it's based on Psalm 104. And this is a song which is just done without any music, so I can just sing right here, right now. O Yahweh Elohim, your wonders know no measure, throwing on a cloak of light as a garment for your pleasure. The beams of your brilliance rest on ripples now before us, moving on wings of the wind. You show yourself so glorious. You made the moon to mark the days. The sun knows when to set. But make your face to shine on us, and we shall be blessed. You set the earth in place, spreading water as a covering. At your voice, mountains rose and left the valleys trembling. You formed creatures by your wisdom, seas vast with countless wonders. And Leviathan placed there as the sky above him thunders. May every being praise you, pledge honor to your name, glorifying Elohim for the bounty he has made. Oh, look to you for food, out in the seasons you've appointed. You open your hand wide, blessings fall on your anointed. Yet if you hide your face, then terror will abound. If you take away our breath, we return unto the ground. So send out your ruach and cause our flourishing. Renew the entire earth, set the curse to vanish. O Yahweh Elohim, my feet are always wandering. May foulness leave my heart, and every thought be pleasing. May evil fade away, and your people bear your likeness. Alone we can do nothing, yet grace shines forth brightness. May your majesty endure, rejoice in what you've made. I'll praise Yahweh forever, for faithful he has stayed.
So as we've said, the first book, The Wanderer Scorned, is told from the point of view of Cain, but the second book is a bit different, and I don't know how much you want to give away, because obviously you want people to read the book, but yeah. What can you say about the second book?
Yeah, the second book, yes, it's written from the point of view of Ahuan, and yes, that was very different, because, well, first of all, it's a woman, so it was a bit easier to write as a woman instead of a man. And as I say, she's a songwriter, so there's lots of songs in that book, and I really enjoyed putting those together. And yeah, it was really nice to write from her point of view, and yet it was dealing with something really, really difficult. So it's the aftermath of Cain's actions. So we all know what happens with Cain, and that was the difficulty in writing the first book, was that everyone knew what the ending was, and they had to still try and make it exciting, even though they knew what was going to happen. That was the challenge, and yet it seems to, everyone says, oh, I raced through it, so that's, yeah. But I hope as well people can take the time to go back and read it slowly and absorb everything, because there's a lot in there. And Arwen's stories, exploring what it would have looked like to have lived with that action. And so she loves both brothers, and then they are taken from her, and both of them together. And actually exploring the idea that it wouldn't just have been awful for her to lose the brother that was killed, Abel, who showed something of God. We know from Hebrews that Abel was considered righteous, and so he must have shown something of God's love and mercy, and just been different to the rest of the family. And he's named as the first prophet, isn't he? So I tried to weave that into his character. But she would have loved that brother, and I actually have her as his twin sister. But also she would have loved her other brother, the one that did the murdering. And what would it have felt like to have had both of your brothers taken away in one day, two people that you loved, and to have lived with the knowledge that one of them was capable of murder? It's just, yeah, just to try and get inside Ahuan's head and imagine the absolute agony of that. And yet, you know, the book could so easily have been really depressing if it was just talking about all of these awful things. And so then the challenge was really
to weave in a story of hope and redemption, and what is God going to do? You know, how are we going to actually consider these questions that Cain was asking in the first one? You know, what's God going to do with that? How is this situation going to be redeemed? So yeah, that's the second story.
You also could have made her, where, like with Cain, then if it was a pantomime, if we were watching a pantomime, he'd be the villain that everyone would boo and hiss, you know. You could have made her the sort of the perfect princess.
Mm.
And I like the way that you actually showed that sin comes in many forms.
Yes.
And yeah, that although she doesn't have Cain's issues, she faces her own,
yes,
temptations, and you know that her struggles are just as real as his. They're just different.
Yes, exactly. And that's something which I'm really sort of passionate about exploring is the idea that actually none of us are good, as I was saying before. No. We all struggle with sin, every single one of us. It's just that some sins are more obvious than others. And a lot of them will be hidden deep inside, and other people will never see it, but it's still there and God sees it. And yeah, so she has her own struggles, and she has to find her own way through that, and she has to grow in her relationship with the Lord as well. Yeah, I really wanted to, perhaps this is one of the things we've found when reading other books as well, is that a lot of the time, you know, Christian fiction particularly can be very whitewashed, and,
yes,
and feel like, you know, the characters are either good or they're bad.
Yeah. There's no in between.
There's not a lot of messiness in between. And yet the reality is actually every single one of us is messy. And I really want to show that through our one. She does nothing that almost that other people would see, that other people would look at. And yet she also has struggles with things, and the little sort of section with her niece Dorit explores that. You read the book, that actually other people can see things as well that we don't always see, and we can be misjudged. And yeah, life is messy, isn't it? We are all a work in progress, and we all need to be sanctified, and we all need to humbly acknowledge our needs before the Lord and be changed by his Holy Spirit. So
I actually wondered whether, because Awan is very godly in the first book, I actually wondered if the second book would be a disappointment by comparison. I guess I wondered if, you know, you would almost paint her as being too good, and I was really pleased that you didn't.
Yes, no. If she's like me in any way whatsoever, then she's definitely not too good. So she's not exactly like me. But as I said at the beginning, it was quite amusing when I was reading out to my husband. But also some of the failings that I've struggled with. And you know, when you are doing well as a Christian, you know, sometimes we have times, often we have times where we feel like we're doing miserably. But sometimes we have times where we're doing well and we think, yes, I can do this. I'm remembering to do my quiet times. I'm turning up at church on Sundays and, you know, everything's going very well. I'm doing, and really to realise that we're not any different in those times. We are in the other times, you know, we need grace all the time. And our one needed to realise that as well. And I need to remind myself of that every day. I need to get on my knees before the Lord every day.
Because she kind of reminds me of like what the experience that you and I both had, where we grew up in the church, so we've grown up knowing what we know, and I think then our struggles do become perhaps more internal, because on the surface we're trying to be the good Christian, show that we're living the good life, so we have the internal struggles more. It's more what goes on inside, and that we still struggle with the things everyone else does. It's just that we're a bit clever about hiding them sometimes.
Yes, exactly.
And I love the way you did that with her. You make her so relatable.
Yeah, and she's desperate to hide when she does mess up. She's desperate to hide it, isn't she? And it has to come out into the open. And often things do need to come out, and the Lord will often bring things out into the open, and that can be a very, very painful process. And I know when things have been brought out, it can be very painful, and and Lord, why are you doing this? Why are you hitting me like this? But he knows that we need it out there, and we need to be real, and we need to own up to things, and to be able to move on, and to find grace, to experience grace, and to share that grace with other people. Because if we look perfect, then all it does is make other people look feel worse.
Yeah. But if we feel like they can't measure up to this high standard, we're not really keeping.
I'm not perfect, I shout at my kids sometimes. I do other things. I'm really not perfect, and if we can be real about that, then it helps other people to also to be real and just go, yes, no, I did. I just need Jesus.
And I think she even does something that I know I've done in the past, which is, I don't know how to put it other than play the martyr. I must just live my life, deny myself, live for everyone else. And she kind of hides from her own pain.
Yes.
Until she's forced to face it.
Yeah, it's a temptation, I felt as well. So yeah. And there's also sort of lessons, I hope lessons in the book for how to deal with certain scenarios. And I'm not an expert, and I hope I'm not trying to paint myself as an expert in any way yet. And there's a section quite close to the beginning where she's dealing with her grief, and she says, I sang of Elohim, which means God in Hebrew, our rock, deliverer, and hiding place in times of trouble. I sang of his greatness, although I couldn't comprehend it. I sang of his love, although I couldn't feel it. And I sang of his goodness, although I didn't see it. It wasn't that I'd ceased to believe that Yahweh was my salvation. I just felt so numb. And sort of part of her experience that mirrored my own when I was going through pain, I couldn't see God's greatness, and I couldn't see his goodness, and I couldn't see his love, and I didn't see it. And I think in those moments you can often have a choice to make. Are you going to trust the Lord, and are you going to sing of those things anyway, or are you going to turn away and say, no, he's not good, I'm not going to believe it? Yeah, and just sort of show that experience, actually. She chooses to sing even though she doesn't feel it, she doesn't comprehend it, she doesn't do that, and that can be a really tough thing to do. But I hope just putting those things into words will help people that are going through difficult times.
Why did you choose to change some of the names that we are familiar with? So you've said you changed Abel to Havel. Why did you do that?
Well, initially, I didn't want to write Cain as C-A-I-N. Mostly because I wanted to almost give the impression that he was a different person. The story was going to be obvious from the beginning that who he was, but really I wanted it to be open for people to see things through his eyes without the automatic judgment that comes with the name Cain. And so I decided to use a Hebrew transliteration of the name. And that is came out as K-I-Y-I-N, and there's various different ways you can transliterate it, but that's the way that I wrote it down. And because I did that, I then thought I'd better be consistent and do it with the other characters as well. So I used the Hebrew names, and we don't know for sure that Hebrew was the most ancient language. I mean, it may have been completely different, or it may have been some sort of form of Hebrew, because of course it wasn't written down back then. But just sort of, I think, trying to use these different names just so the characters could kind of have a fresh voice. That was my intention. I don't know whether it worked. So you as a reader perhaps could tell me. But that was where I was getting at. And I think the same thing can happen with God if we use the word God. For some people, that can have all sorts of negative connotations. And using the Hebrew name, although it might feel a bit weird and might take a little while to get used to it, it perhaps removes that barrier. But again, I'm not sure. I need to do a survey of readers to find out whether it was successful or not.
Did you find one of the books easier to write than the other?
Yes, I think the second one was easier. Probably, as I said, because writing from a woman's perspective was easier. Also, I think I had to do so much editing on The Wanderer Scorned. I went back and forth with a developmental edit quite a bit, and I had several beta readers look at it for me, because it was really hard to write as an anti-hero, to write as a villain, and to actually have people still enjoying the book. So if you're going to write, you know, if your main character is essentially unlikable, people are just going to put the book down and not carry on reading. And so I needed to work on it quite a lot to get the balance right. And also that sort of, again, the Adam thing, him seeing Adam so negatively, and I needed it to be well balanced and not all negative. So it was really quite tricky to get that one right. And the second one was a lot easier to write, and it came more naturally. And yet also it didn't have the same scriptural basis. It was, you know, 98% imagination. And so there was good points and bad points with that.
But again, what I found as a reader is that even though, yeah, there is more scriptural basis for the first book, they flow so seamlessly that you would think there was for the second.
Yes. Well, it was written as one book initially. So I wrote the whole thing together. It was never intended to be separated. But then when I started looking into publishing options, I was advised that it would be better to separate them because it'd be very long. It didn't seem very long to me because I'm used to reading classical books, classical literature. And so to me, it didn't seem very long at all. But modern books are generally much shorter. It does work, and I'm glad for that advice. But at the same time, it was very much one story. It really is one story, because and I was really quite scared that people would read The Wanderer Scorned and not want to read The Wanderer Reborn, and that they would never finish the story and they would be left on this kind of, oh my goodness, everything's sort of gone wrong and God is sort of terrible kind of ending. And I was like, no, they need to read the second. So it was really hard for me to leave that in God's hands. I really wanted it to be one book so that nobody didn't finish the story. And it was quite hard. I had to pray about it a lot and really give it over to God and trust him for that, and trust him that people will read the second book. And yeah, and so I just am praying over it, really. Just pray that they will get there. But it is quite different, isn't it, the second one? It's quite different in flavour. It's a lot more sort of theological
yeah, I mean, it is different, but again, like, because I read them really back to back. I finished the one and within a couple of hours I started the second. And it is a seamless transition between the two.
Yeah,
even though the narrator changes.
Extended, yeah. Yes. That's good. Other people have to wait.
I could see that you wrote them as one book. And I love the way that you end the first book, giving a hint of what the second will be. And I think that'll make people want to read on.
Yes, I hope so. Yeah, I had to slip some of that in there to make sure that hopefully the cliffhanger would pull people into the next book. But also that the whole story is sandwiched. And did you notice the little beetles at the end? So right at the beginning, we have when Cain is skittering over the fallen tree on the journey, he sees the beetles under the tree and he says, look, Abba, there's new life here. Do you remember that bit right at the beginning?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's that kind of theme with the beetles skittering on the palm is mirrored right at the end. And there's sort of a few little instances like that where the narrative is sort of a sandwich and it's pulled back in and different things are woven in. So, but it's one of those things that some people will see and some people won't see, and maybe you need to read it a couple of times to pick up those little nuances.
I think you do, because I think the first time you read a story for content, because you just want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think the second time you go back and read it, then you see the things you missed.
Yes. Yeah, I've had a few people say to me already that they've already read it two or three times. That's amazing. It's only been out for a few months. So it always really encourages my heart when I hear those stories.
So how do you get inspiration for writing?
A lot of the time just through prayer. But when I get stuck on things, I often go for a walk. So I have a dog, a spotty dog, and I walk him every morning, and then sometimes he'll get extra walks if I'm stuck on something. Because I find that actually just being in nature and outside, and I know lots of writers find this, that it kind of gets the creative juices flowing. And so I'll often go for a walk. And actually, the prologue epilogue sandwich story came about through a walk. So I'd been sort of thinking that there was something else that I was missing. So I'd written all of Cain's story, and I felt there was something I was missing. And I was walking the dog, and suddenly I went, Lamech! Mm. It just came in as Lamech, that's it. Mm. And that whole narrative came out through that. So I was really, yeah, grateful for that.
Yeah, I love the way you put that in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit, some people have said it was a bit unrealistic, and it is a little bit unrealistic that people would sit there and listen for that long. But it's really, it's a literary device, and it's meant to be telling a bigger story. And I would never have, say this was written as one book and I expected that to be it. But actually the sandwich story is now going to lead into a book three, which is quite exciting.
I was going to ask you, I was hoping for that. Yeah, because yeah, you left that, us at the end. I thought there's something here, you know?
Yeah, something going on. Yeah, so it was only probably about 6 months ago that I formulated book three in my head, and it's going to be following on from the what I call the sandwich story. I don't know if that's the technical term, the prologue epilogue section, and Lamech's family, and it's going to be following on from that. But it was only very late in the day, a long time after I'd written the main text, that idea sort of came, and I was just like, oh, this is great. This is why, you know, Lamech's narrative needed to be in there, because yeah, there's going to be more. So I'm excited about that when I actually get time to write it.
Yeah, because I can see potential in that, because the whole thing with Lamech reminds me of kind of the times we're living in now, where 90% of people don't want to hear God's message. Yes. But yet you get the odd person who does.
Yes.
And they've got to then try and live in a hostile environment.
Yeah. And it's really tricky as well, because also, if you're following the scripture, you're also following the knowledge that all of all of those people were wiped out by the flood. And that's a really, really hard hitting. And so when I finished this book, I originally changed the ending. My ending was originally when in Genesis 6, when the Lord looks at the earth and he sees that the whole earth is corrupt. And it's a precursor. And I don't actually mention the flood, but I that was like my ending. And it went with the epilogue, the speech in the epilogue. And I've taken that out now, because I'm going to put that into book three instead. But it's not going to be a flood narrative, actually. I've chosen to put a flood narrative into a completely different set of books. And that's my work in progress at the moment, which is something that I'm working on. And I am writing for young adults this time. So Wanderer 3 is going to have to wait. But it will be, again, it will just be based on a very, very small amount of scripture, because it's just a little bit about Lamech's family, which is very little at the end of Genesis 4. But there's going to be a lot of imagination to fill in all the gaps.
So when you, because obviously you've got four children, so finding time to write must be tricky.
Yes. Yeah, so I started to say I wrote the bulk of it in the lockdown in 2021. And bizarrely found that I had more time then, even though I had four children at home and I was homeschooling them all. they got, our school was very good, and they gave them lots of things to do, and I was able to sort of manage that. And then I always get up very early, and so I was writing quite often between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. in the morning, and then I'd be dealing with the children less today, and then I might write a little bit more in the evening. But that wasn't sustainable once things went back to normal, as far as they have done post-COVID, because, you know, there's clubs and things going on and evening meetings, and also I do need to spend some time with my husband. So so now I try and write during the day, and I have set days when I write. I do have to do a bit of work for the family business as well, and then there's obviously running the household and sorting out all the children's bits and bobs and cleaning and things that also have to be done. So, but I tend to try and write for 2 days a week for the bulk of the 6 hours that the children are at school.
So, I mean, do you like to have quiet, or can you write with all the boys running around you and making all the noise? And...
Yeah, I did become a little bit of an expert at writing with headphones on. So during the lockdowns and the summer holidays, I will put headphones on, and because I play the trumpet as well, sometimes I will put on like trumpet music that I'm trying to learn, and I'll put that on headphones. And then you know, it's like killing two birds. I'm all for multitasking. I'll be learning the classical music that I need to know, and then at the same time, subconsciously, as writing the book. But it would need to be classical music. I don't think I could listen to anything with lyrics on when I was writing, because that would mess things up. But when I'm on my own and the house is quiet, then I do prefer to just have the quiet.
Well, thank you very, very much for talking to us, and you know, just really excited about the launch of your book on Saturday. And I will be putting up links, because I imagine a lot of people listening to this, some of them may be visually impaired, so obviously they would go for the Kindle version. So I'll be putting up links for that, because I think it is coming out on Kindle, isn't it?
Yes, and it's on Kindle Unlimited as well. So if anyone has an unlimited subscription, they can read it for free. Yeah, both books.
You know, having read them, I can't recommend them highly enough, because they taught me a lot about myself, as well as things about Cain and Abel and all the other characters. So I saw a lot of myself in those books, even though they were set in a very early time, a time that we don't know loads about. But like we said, people haven't changed. Yeah. We're still human beings. We still have the same struggles. And yeah, so thank you very, very much for blessing us with your books.
Oh, thank you very much for having me and encouraging me. It's yeah, it is so encouraging to chat to people about it. And you know, it can be a lonely thing, can't it, writing? But to chat with others, it's great. It's a lot of fun. So thank you very much for having me.
So I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed talking to Natasha. It was such a blessing and a privilege. And like I say, really encouraging to speak to a fellow Christian author. Just a few little things before we end the podcast today. You can find out more about Natasha's work on her website, which is natashawoodcraft.com, natashawoodcraft.com. Or you can go on to YouTube and look for her, where you can hear her songs. And her books, both The Wanderer Scorned and The Wanderer Reborn, are available directly from her on her website, but also on Kindle. So if you search Amazon for Natasha Woodcraft, you'll be able to find her books and enjoy them on Kindle if that's your preferred reading method. So thank you all for listening on behalf of Natasha and myself, and wishing her every blessing with her launch. And I will speak to you all soon. God bless.
Thank you for listening. For more information, please go to www.worshipunlimitedministries.org. If you'd like to get in touch or give feedback, you can email worshipunlimited1@gmail.com. And we'll be back with another devotional next week. God bless you all.